Good evening, everyone. This is Cosmos 91.5 FM, Hellenic Public Radio, WNYE in New York. I'm Bill Bushell, and the show is Graffiti. On the first day, God created the heavens and the earth. But it wasn't until the second day that he gave the land its form, filling in the rest with water. Upon finishing the task, he looked at his work and was pleased with what he saw. But there was still much to do. So with a sigh, he rubbed his hands together to rid himself of the soil that clung to them and turned to the job of giving light to his creation. What he didn't see, didn't realize, was that all those bits and clumps of earth that he had just brushed from his hands fell toward the earth, where they landed in the water forming the islands, the Greek islands. Take a look at a map of the Mediterranean. Some of the islands are easy to spot, islands like Crete that lies halfway between Athens and Africa. Above Crete is the claw-shaped Thyatira, or Santorini, which, according to some, is the basis for the legend of Atlantis. Now head to the east, and just before you hit the Turkish coast, you'll pass just north of the island of Rhodes, the largest island of a group called the Dodecanese. Rhodes was once the home of one of the 12 wonders of the ancient world, the Colossus, a bronze statue that was close to 100 feet tall and stood guard over the city of Rhodes some 2,300 years ago. Now from Rhodes, look south and west, back towards Crete. You'll see there are two islands between Rhodes and Crete. The one nearest to Crete is Kassos. The other, the one that looks like the dotted letter I, is Karpathos. For the next half hour, we're going to be treated to a visit, sort of, to this very special island. I heard of Karpathos a few years ago after a friend of mine came back from a cruise to some of the islands. Stops included some of the places you would expect, like Rhodes and Crete, but a stop was also made at the island of Karpathos. With mounting excitement, he told me about landing at Diafani and climbing up the sheer mountainside. He spoke of houses clinging to the sides of the mountain, and views of the sea that would never tire. He spoke of the village of Olympos and its matrilineal society. What? I said. Yes, you heard me. It's a society run by women. I had to laugh. One of my favorite words is hubris, a Greek word, of course, and has to do with arrogant pride. In all the great Greek tragedies, once the hero fell prey to hubris, he would inevitably take a bigger fall, usually a final deadly fall. Well, this was my turn to fall. After all my time and involvement with Greece and the Greek community, I thought I knew Greece. That there weren't any real surprises left. Well, blessedly, I was wrong. So I began reading about this straight little island that lies halfway between Rhodes and the eastern tip of Crete. And yes, Karpathos is known for its matrilineal ways and their traditional costume and a dialect that can be traced back to the time of Homer. But I also discovered so much more. Karpathos has been known by many different names. Homer in the Iliad called it Krapathos. Further back, it was called Porphyrus, the color red for the dye that was once manufactured there. It was also known as Tetrapolis for the four ancient cities of the island. The Venetians, one of the many former rulers of the island, called it Scarpanto. At one time, pirates controlled the island, using it as a base of operations from which they could plunder all the ships that passed by in nearby waters. Angry ship captains called the island Arpactos, or robbery, which was eventually corrupted into today's name of Karpathos. The island is still said to have pirate treasure hidden on and around it. But what I discovered through my readings and my conversations with people from there is that the treasure is not gold and silver. Not the gold and silver one might find in old sunken ships in Vorontis Bay, but the true treasure is to be found in the hearts and minds of the proud people of this island. People who have kept something very special alive in spite of all the pressures put on them by the 20th century. And tonight, in the studio with me, I have two men from Karpathos. Two men who will share with us their interesting views of what makes Karpathos special. With me are my friends Manolis Tsangaris and Perry Laganikos. And we're going to talk about the folk music and poetry of Karpathos. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, tell everybody, what's so special about Karpathos?
Well, despite what we would like to say, just in terms of limiting it to its natural beauty and its very well-known and pristine beaches, what makes it special, what makes Karpathos special is what you said before, and that is its people, with their deep-rooted culture and their traditions. Their social, spiritual, and emotional existence is basically expressed in their folk music, dance, and poetry, all of which have remarkably withstood the test of time. Carpathian music is played by the descendant of Apollo's lyra, which is accompanied by the bagpipe called sabmuna, and only in this century by the lauto or lute. Carpathian dances are unlike most Greek folk dances. They command an imposing presence and grace through powerful yet austere motion reminiscent of the dances from Pontus. Poetry, however, has been and still remains the principal form of emotional and spiritual expression. Carpathians engage in poetry to lyrically epitomize their private and public lives and emotions. Carpathian folk poetry is based on the mandinada, which is composed of two 15-syllable rhyming verses of iambic rhythm identical to Homer's epics. The mandinada is still used to an equal or lesser extent in other places such as Cyprus, Crete, Kassos, and other islands of the Aegean, so it is not unique in Karpathos. There are two basic categories of mandinada, those composed spontaneously and sung in public as part of social and family gatherings, and those planned and composed privately and communicated in writing. They convey thoughts and emotions about happiness, sorrow, personal experiences, love and romance, private, social, and even political events. In social gatherings such as weddings, baptisms, religious festivals, and in particular impromptu parties, Carpathians engage in poetic dialogue for hours and sometimes days. In such parties, or what we call them, glendia, typically held in coffee shops or tavernas, participants gather around folk musicians where they compose and sing mandinadas to each other.
Thank you, Barry. That was a very clear description of the mandinadas. And Manolis, tell us about the next piece that we're going to listen to and what it's all about.
Yeah, I would like to say also that were born in Carpathos. I know a lot of things about Carpathos, but the last few years we have been trying to discover Carpathos for ourselves again, and through a hobby that we have developed, and that's doing live recordings of events. And this is a sort of a ultimate experience, I think, because it puts you really very close to what is going on. We used to go to those events as spectators and having a peripheral involvement there, but now actually having to record those, it's just a very different feeling. So today you're going to have some of our own pieces as well as parts of the traditional pieces from Carpathos, and the next one is something we recorded from a baptism, and you'll hear the grandfather emotionally touched, and he sings about his grandchild as he gets his own name.
Okay.
So that was a spontaneous song, mandinadas that the grandfather composed right at the moment, and you can see how emotionally touched he was. And you also heard the rest of people accompanying, repeating on the melody and the rhyme, as it was heard. There are a lot of scopi, a lot of rhythms, and about 40 of them for every moment. For every different occasion, there is one of them. And the lira player knows how to play them, depending on who sings and what is the person is singing about, and so on and so forth. It's a whole, we can be talking about this for hours, it's a whole process, it's a whole protocol that you have to follow on these occasions. There's a topic that people talk about by singing, of course. They take turns, there's a dialogue going on, and everything, with music and with people participating, either by singing as active participants or by following. And this sort of, Glendi is a stamp, it's a characteristic of Carpathian life, and it happens in all, aspects of life.
And can anybody do it?
A lot of people are trying to do it. Others are more skilled, have more skill in doing it, others less skill, but all of them are trying to do it, and depending on where you go, you'll see different styles and different sort of music that is being played.
And do either of you sing?
Well, I guess one could say that we wish we could, but we're not good at singing two scopi, which are the melodies, and we're actually definitely not good at composing poetry spontaneously.
But we can follow.
we can participate in the Glendi more sort of as part of the chorus, and we wish we could engage in the active part of composing poetry, but we really cannot. And this is what we really totally admire about that what is still part of our culture and what is still so live and prevalent in all of the Glendia, which are our parties. It's just interesting to say that depending on the occasion, sort of a baptism or a wedding or a festival for a saint, these glendia can start and go on for hours and hours, where there is a conversation taking place. Obviously, the topic's changing from time to time, but this can go on for hours and with just maybe 15 or 20 or 30 participants.
So there's similarities in the fact that it's a dialogue or a conversation, and yet there are differences in the occasions or what the reason for it is.
Yes, I mean, for sure, the one sings on the topic, or one starts a topic and then basically discusses it in poetry. So if we have a festival for a saint, then we see that there's a lot of mandinadas that are sung on behalf of the saint. But in a baptism, then we'll be talking about the child being baptized and
the
wedding,
father, the family, the continuation of name and whatever that brings.
Right.
The table.
So there's a great deal of diversity in the types of music that's.
Yeah.
And also, let's not ignore, which is the main glendia, and that is the one that starts also spontaneously in the cafe Neo in the coffee shop,
mm-hmm.
Without being programmed or without having any special occasion in mind, where a couple of people will start playing music, a couple more will sit around the table, and eventually enough people will gather around the musicians, and you'll have a glendia that will go on overnight or carry on for 2 or 3 days.
That's got to be an incredible thing to participate in.
But speaking about diversity, actually, the next piece we want to put here is called Skopos tis Nichtas. It's a song that traditionally has been sung for serenades, but also on occasions that people want to be very serious about it. So let's hear the next piece, and then you'll find three different segments there from three different parts of Karpathos and Kassos.
Αιδες ενις τα ώρες δεκατρεις μόνο τις τρεις κοιμούμε μω. Έλα να σε φιλήσω με λαχρινούλα μου, να σβήσει το γιάνκινι που έχει καρδούλα μου.
So those were three versions of the Nichta Skopo, and from respectively from Kassos, from the middle of Karpathos, Othos, and also from Olympos. The same music theme, different occasions, different lyrics there are sung, and the first one is a serenade, the second one was plain, and the third one are a series of mandinades of a very really serious style. So that's an example of diversity that we have. I mean, you notice that the similarity of the rhythm, but also you know, the colorations are quite interesting in the way that people, you know, improvise and play.
Right.
And also notice a similarity with the close by Casus, who has a lot of themes that we have in Carpathos and vice versa. As a matter of fact, I think we have identical music, or at least very related.
Yeah, and one, I guess we want to point out in terms of the melody being basically sort of an ensemble with the lyrics to communicate, you know, the thoughts and the emotions. It one looks at Skopje, but and we just had an example of it, but there are a lot of them. There are about 40 that are well known from what Manoli said before,
right.
But they're different. Some of them are fast, some of them are slow, others are sad, and others are sort of gay melodies, upbeat. People use them sort of as instruments to accompany the lyrics that they compose, so that they can basically express what they're trying to do at the moment. And it's interesting also to sort of understand or kind of realize that there is a structure to the scopo or the melody that permits this conversation or the spontaneous composition of poetry to take place. Because the singer will start and sing the first half of the first
verse,
and then the chorus kicks in and repeats basically the same thing, and the singer will continue with the second half and so on. So there's the melody actually, or the scopo is actually a lot longer in time than the singing of the lyrics, and that extra time is what allows the singer to compose and think. A lot of times he will start singing without knowing how to end the mandinada. And that's the actual phenomenal thing about this. It's not that, well, at least I've thought about this scopo and I'm going to just sing it outright.
Right.
But they'll start and they'll basically segue in and kind of engage without knowing how to finish it. A lot of times it's obvious because people then will repeat more than what is customary. But that is totally allowed and encouraged, because it's obviously what counts is the active participation and the spontaneous composition.
But they're not all spontaneous, are they?
Well, in a setting of a glendi, most of the time, mandinadas are composed spontaneously. But
although the anxious people will prepare something to be sung there, but yeah.
Yeah, and there are occasions where, for example, where we know there's a baptism or there's a wedding with a family, the immediate family needs to say some things and they want to make sure that they've done their best in expressing their emotions and their thoughts publicly. Well, they will prepare ahead of time and then they'll sit down and actually think about them, sort of sit down and write poetry more in the sense that we normally understand poetry as composed.
Right. Right.
And that is the extent where in a setting of a glendi you have a prepared mandinada.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not spontaneous, and those are obvious. They're not sort of within the strict protocol of a glendi, but they're actually tolerated and accepted because they have something important to express.
Right.
But there's other forms of mandinada, and that's what I guess one could talk about is the written form that is done more in a way of privately expressing thoughts and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Privately or publicly, sometimes. I mean, there's Carpathian newspaper where people congratulate people by writing, you know, mandinadas, or have been to occasions where mandinadas are read as poems. It's very common. Also, at you may find mandinadas written on landmarks and things like that. So,
and well, you just came back from being on the island, and I know one of the things when we talked about this, you said you started thinking differently because people were speaking to you almost in poetic terms.
Poetically, that's right. That's right. I mean, you can if you. Listen to a lot of them, you'll hear embedded in speech, you know, short snippets there of mandinadas that kind of find appropriate to say. Like, for example, if you're very close to a deadline, like probably who we are here, they will say, Aninta Savata Makria, I Paraskes Kontaine. So even if, you know, Saturdays are far away, Fridays are even closer, so maybe should go to the next piece, which is an example of a poem. Originally was at least a letter from the mother to the son, and then it was set to music.
This letter is basically written to the son, who is somewhere overseas and far away from the mother. The mother is on the island and basically misses the son. It was set to music. understand about this, that it was originally part of a private letter, which may have been written also by somebody else, because it's more than likely that the mother was not literate, did not know how to write these things, but probably narrated them to somebody else, and they did the writing.
So let's go to the that poem, and it will be read first and then sung by Marigula Cricciotti.
Ούλοι σου ισιωμάλιτζοι ήρθασαν μαζωμένοι, σε χαίρετο ημάνεστο, σε εγώ μου χωλιασμένοι. Σε χαίρετο ημάνεστο, τους γιους το που θωρούσα, σε μένα τα μαντάζια μου σαν τη βροχή νεκλούσα. Μας είσαι Γιάννη μου καλά, κι εσύ είσαι και μακριά μου, θα έρθει καιρός που θα χαρεί και εμένα η καρδιά μου.
Were gathered. Their mothers were happy, but I was sad. Their mothers were happy because they had their sons in front of their eyes. Yet my eyes were pouring tears like rain. Ah, Yanni, my son, it's all right for you to be away as long as you are well. I know that the time will come for my heart to rejoice, just like the tree that ripens its fruit and its aroma reaches me from far away. That's an incredible letter. So, has the music changed in the past 100 years, or is it pretty much essentially the same as it was then?
Well, there is an evolution that is typical of any tradition. But essentially, things have really remained unchanged. As we mentioned earlier, there's diversity in style, geographically and in individual interpretation. One can see enough improvisation there, sort of linking it or correlating it to American jazz or blues, both in how lyrics are expressed and how music is played. But things basically have remained unchanged. There's one noteworthy exception, maybe, that one could really easily point out, and that is reflective, I guess, of our modern times, and that's the faster tempo of dance music. We have actually a compilation of three different pieces, one recorded in 1935 by Baudovie, a Frenchman, and where somebody by the name of Niotis plays lira. And we also have a piece recorded in Baltimore in 1976 where we notice the difference now in tempo, but also the lavish inflections of the lira player, who is by the name of Papa Minas. And then we have a last piece which was recorded in 1995, and that is sort of the raw energy that we see in Sofilas, where now this is from Olympos, and the style is different, but there's sort of a really dynamic tempo in the dance music.
So let's hear this next piece.
So, what does the future hold? Are there great singers out there, great musicians? What's happening?
Plenty. It's incredible. I mean, how many young people learn how to play, you know, lira and the other instruments? It's just incredible. And I say incredible because in our times that wasn't the case. It's a recent theme, I think, all over Greece.
Sort of a renaissance, one could say.
Renaissance, rediscovering the tradition, and people even here in the States that are from Carpathos, they carry with them their own lira and they play here. So I think I'm very optimistic about the future. I think
one has to really kind of accept, in a sense, especially for Carpathos, that music and poetry basically identify the Carpathian soul. They really express the pathos and the ethos and forge an unbreakable bond with the motherland. This isn't just, a way of engaging in a party. It's sort of a real emotional expression.
Manoli, do you have some names of some of the up-and-coming stars?
Well, I don't have those names, but I have names of people that actually heard the program, and I have the feeling that I would like to mention a few of them. There are too many to mention, notably Papa Minas, who actually lives in Baltimore, in Baltimore here in the United States, Manoli Sofilas from Olympos, who lives in Greece, Kostetsos from Othos, you know, Zografidis from Olympos, Perselis from Kassos. I mean, there are a lot of names of people to, you know, mention here. I would like to deeply thank them for keeping this tradition alive and, you know, giving us this beautiful music to hear all over the world.
And we're really optimistic that the young people will continue engaging in this tradition with respect and enthusiasm, so that we can make sure that we preserve the tradition, and then we ensure that there is continuity and relevance in this lifestyle and emotional expression.
Manolis Tsongaris and Barry Laganikos, thank you very much for coming on and talking about this incredible topic. We're out of time. Gotta go. See you soon. Kalinikta. May the eagles fly. Love you.